told you that we would be spending a fair amount of time on this because it's important for us to make sure that we track with these things accurately. So there's a lot to cover as always, so I want to get started here right away with the introduction. In lesson 166, we looked at the physical description of manuscript 98. And before I get too far into this, if you're joining us right now online and you would like to follow along with the notes, if you go to gracelifebiblechurch.com, and you can go to February 27 right here and click on the link, and then you will be able to open the same notes that we will be following here in class. Now, the notes that I have loaded onto the website are somewhat updated. I added one thing from what I sent Sylvia to be looked at, but we're definitely going to be looking at this. If you want to follow along, here are the notes online. Again, we're right here on the introduction, point number one. So, in lesson 166, we looked at the physical description and contents of manuscript 98, okay? So again, that is this manuscript right here in the image, all right? I've showed you this image now multiple times. This time I have it, 1 Corinthians chapter 8 called up, where we have the handwriting of the translators in this primary work in progress document. Again, this is in Lambeth Palace Library, and we've said a lot about it, so I don't want to repeat all of that. I want to make progress. Point number two. More recently, in lesson 167 and 168, we considered how manuscript 98 impacts the readings found in the King James Bible. This was accomplished by conducting a collation of a 1602 Bishop's Bible, manuscript 98, and the 1611 Authorized Version, or AV, for Romans 1 and 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Please see the conclusion of lesson 168 for a discussion of our summative takeaways. So that was what we talked about last week. I don't want to repeat all that or we won't make any progress, okay? So understand that if you're joining us right now or you're just watching this or tuning in, you're joining us and we're in the middle of a flowing stream of content that's been flowing for a while now. And if you're dipping your toe in the water right now and you're like, what's he talking about? You can go back and get the information from the previous lessons on the church's website, okay? Now, in lesson 166, we ran across Ward Allen's discussion of Colossians 2:12 and manuscript 98, which led into a conversation related to the irksome subject of printer errors in the Authorized Version. I suggested, based upon the evidence furnished by manuscript 98, that we should not be too quick to call differences in the various editions of the Authorized Version, or AV, printer errors. Consider the following summary of our discussion with respect to Colossians 2:12. Okay, now, this table here shows Colossians 2:12, and I'm going to explain this table. We've already talked about this, but I want to make sure that we are clear about this. Okay? Hey, Craig. There's notes right there for you on the back table. Okay, so let's go through this, all right? So here we have, so this is a review of an issue that already came up, all right? So here we have the 1602 Bishop's Bible, all right? On the far left column, manuscript 98, this was left blank, indicating that in their first stage of revision, were they intending to accept the Bishop's Bible without revision? That's what that means. We've talked about that back in lesson 166, I believe, okay? So it's marked with a Q, okay? Then we have the 1611 AV in this column, and you'll notice that what was originally in the Bishop's here, the underlined portion has been revised, all right? And what we want to pay particular attention to is this thing right here. The bishops originally said what?
Ye.
Ye, okay? When the 1611, though, says what?
You.
So there's a change from ye to you in the 1611, okay? And then if we look at our standard 1769 text, so everybody open your Bible. Just open your Bible quick. Go to Colossians chapter 2, verse 12, and tell me what it says. I already know what it says because I already looked at it, but it says what? It says ye, okay? So, at some point, the you of the 1611 was changed to a what?
Ye.
Okay, so now let's go through the comments. So I'm in this column right here, we're going to go through the comments, we're going to look at this in a little bit more detail, okay? So first, it's left blank in manuscript 98. That signals that they originally intended to move the bishop's reading forward without what? Change, okay? Then, at some point, it is marked with the Q for query in the margin. So that's the Q, all right? So the first time through, they're like, we're going to accept that reading the way it is. Then somebody marked it with a Q indicating it needed to be what? Looked at further, right? Then we come to the sixth, go to the next statement. The bishop's clause, in whom ye are also risen again, is revised in the AV to read, wherein also you are risen again. Okay, you are risen with him. So that's the underlining here indicating the change from the 1602 bishops to the King James. So do they revise the ye of the bishops to a you in the 1611? Yes or yes? Yes, okay. Then the 1769 AV reads, ye are risen, as opposed to you are risen in the AV. And this change is made for the first time that I can find. And I'm going to click this link here. This is an active link in a printing of the King James from 1748. Okay? So 1748, if the internet will cooperate here, it should flag exactly the section that I want to point to you. And I want to thank Christopher Yetzer for sending this to me. So here's a 1748 printing. Notice what it says. Wherein also what? Ye are risen with him. So a 1748 printing changes the you to a what? To a ye. And then that becomes the standard reading. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the notes. Does everybody see that here in the image? So there's an active link there when these notes online will take you to that image so that you can see that for yourself. Okay? So let's go to page 2. The phenomenon also occurs in Romans 11:1. So the same phenomenon that we just talked about in Colossians 2:12 also occurs in Romans 11:1, a verse that was discussed in detail in lesson 168. Our focus below is on the words ye and you in the printed history of the text, okay? So, let's go to that then. And I want to be able to show everybody what I'm talking about, so we'll make this big, all right? So we'll just go through the comments, all right? The 1602 bishops read, ye might be. So let's look at that. That ye might be. Everybody see that? All right? Let's go to the next point. Manuscript 98 revised it to you may be. So here it is. Notice the change here. Manuscript 98 says what? You. 1602 bishops said what?
Ye.
Now, guys, think about that. Does that mean then that they are intentionally changing that ye to a you when they do their draft work in Manuscript 98?
Yeah.
Okay. Look at the AV column. The 1611 accepted manuscripts 98's revision, you may be. So does the AV accept the revision of manuscript 98 into the authorized version's text? Yes or yes?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm glad we agree. All right. Then the standard 1769 text reads, ye may be. And it was changed in 1762 according to Lawrence Vance. And this is what I'm talking about here. I've referenced this before. This book by Lawrence Vance is a work in progress. He is releasing every chapter as he finishes it in a spiral binding. Anybody who buys every chapter will then receive a free copy of the complete book when he is done writing the entire thing. I have subscribed and I am getting all of this. It's the text of the King James Bible. He has released 4 chapters, I believe. I have another one of these. I have all of them at home. But this is where I'm getting this from. He has, look at this, every verse, every word in the whole thing, he has gone through and compared every single edition and printing. Okay, you're talking about a lot of time into this. So that is where I'm getting this from. Okay, now let's talk about this. Okay, now. Do King James advocates make a very big deal about ye versus you?
Yes,
they do. Okay? Now, it is my personal belief that, generally speaking, the ye is a good thing because it is more specific. Okay? However, we have to do some rethinking on this. Did the King James translators intentionally change a ye in the 1602 bishops into a you? In manuscript 98, and then into a U again, into the AB. But then somebody else later on did what? Changed it back. Okay? Was that their choice? When you are reading in your Bible right now that you bought at the store, the standard 1769 text, and it says ye, Is that what the translator said it should be?
No.
No. They said it should say what?
You.
Now, you can see the problem here. If you don't accept the idea that preservation did not require verbatim identicality of wording, do you have a major problem here? Okay, now the problem gets worse. Let's go to the next point. In Paul's epistles alone, there are 41 verses. It's changed. It should say 42, yes. So we need to, I recounted it as 42. In Paul's epistles alone, there are 42 verses where more recent printings of the AV, such as the 1762 and or the 1769, read ye, where the 1611 originally read you. See pages 196 and 198 in Vance, and that's this book right here that I just showed you. Okay. Furthermore, in all 42 cases, there is evidence when comparing manuscript 98 against a 1602 bishop's and a 1611 AV that the choice of you was the intentional choice of the translators. In many of the 42 cases, the 1602 bishops read ye in instances where the translators amended the text to read you, as in manuscript 98 and or the AV. In other occasions, the AV moved the bishop's reading of you forward into both manuscript 98 and the 1611 without alteration. In either case, the outcome is the same. The King James translators chose you as the correct reading, okay? Now, here's the addition, guys, that you're going to see online that is not in those notes. Here are all of the references where this phenomenon occurs. This is in Paul's epistles alone. There are 42 times where the translators intended to say and chose for the text to say you, that somebody later on changed it to a what? Ye. Okay? Now, I've focused on those 42 because those 42 can be checked against manuscript 98, because manuscript 98 is of the New Testament epistles. Okay? However, if you look at Vance's work, for the whole Bible, Genesis through Revelation, excluding the Apocrypha, so we're not, this data does not include the Apocryphal books, it just includes Genesis through Revelation, the canonical books, there are a total of 196 times that you is changed to ye between 1611 and 1769. And there are 6 times that ye is changed to you. Okay, now, those of you that have been around this topic for any length of time, I don't need to explain to you why this is a issue. Okay? Now, I'm reporting to you the textual facts. Okay? You can get mad at me if you want to. You can write me hate mail and send me email and tell me what a terrible human I am and how I'm trying to undermine the authority of the King James Version when all I'm trying to do is tell you the truth about its printed history. Okay? The reality is that in Paul's epistles, 42 times, the data and the evidence suggest that the translators thought it should say you, and somebody later on changed it to what?
Ye.
So, I don't care if you are reading an Oxford Bible or a Cambridge Bible. I don't care if you're reading an American printing. I don't care if you're reading a Thomas Nelson printing, a Holman printing. When you are reading a standard 1769 text, you are not reading the original worded choices of the translators in these 42 verses. Now, that said, I don't think there's a substantive problem here, because there are plenty of other times where the translators use the word you, and they're clearly referring to the second person plural. For example, turn in your Bible to Ephesians chapter 1. Go to Ephesians chapter 1. This is why I call this the irksome subject, okay? Nobody wants to talk about this. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 1. Notice what it says. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, to the saints which are at Ephesus, and to the faithful in Christ Jesus, grace be to who? You. Now, who is the you referring to?
The saints.
It's referring to the saints and the folks there that are in Ephesus in the first verse, right? So here we have an example of you being used by the King James translators to clearly refer to the plural, right? So whether it's you or ye, it doesn't affect the substantive doctrinal content of the text, but we cannot say and or continue to say accurately that the only differences between the various editions of the King James are spelling, punctuation, and printer errors. Now you can say whatever you want, you can believe whatever you want, but if you want to be factually accurate, you cannot say that. Now let's go to the next point. So, how should we view these? How should we view these 42 verses in the face of the evidence furnished by Manuscript 98? Were they all printer errors or later editorial changes? While inconvenient for some, the fact is inescapable. Readers of the standard 1769 text in the 21st century are not reading the original translational choices of the translators in at least 42 verses in Paul's epistles. 42 times they said what? You, somebody else later on, a later editor switched it to what?
Ye.
This, of course, is an irksome subject for some because it stands in direct opposition to standard King James only talking points. It is commonly repeated by King James advocates that the only differences between a 1611 and a 1769 edition are 1, spelling, 2, punctuation, and 3, the correction of printer errors. A prime example of this reasoning is Dr. Peter S. Ruckman's 1983 publication, Differences in King James Version Editions. In the short 25-page booklet, Dr. Ruckman takes critics of the pro-King James position to task over their insistence that the genuine updating and the genuine revision work done on the different editions of the AV should justify the replacing of its Greek text. The following statements from the pen of Ruckman are indicative of the common thinking on the matter within the King James only movement. There are a series of quotes, so let's look at the first one, quote, "The variations are divided into 3 classes, manifest errors of the typesetter in the copy of 1611, manifest typesetting problems in the 1613 edition, and other variant forms from 1611. In the first class, there are such things as the capital L put into Lord in Exodus chapter 14, verse 10. Shall burnt them was corrected to shall burn them in Leviticus chapter 4, verse 35. A woman that traveleth has been altered to a woman that travaileth in Isaiah 13, 8 and Isaiah 21, 3. Sons nor daughters has been altered to sons nor daughter has been altered to sons nor daughter, so the spelling's different, in Ezekiel 14:18. Shewed them by the prophets have been corrected to hewn them by the prophets in Hosea 6:5, and if ye offer has been omitted in Malachi chapter 1 verse 8 and has been reinstated in the 1613 edition. That ye remember me has been altered to that you remember me has been altered to that ye remember me. Now that one we're going to have to check. Let's actually do that. Is that one in the list? 1 Corinthians 11:2.
Yes.
Yep. So now let me ask you a question. Has Ruckman looked at manuscript 98? I'll tell you the answer to that. Probably not. Okay? You are to think that since typographical errors in one text were corrected, a better spelling were set up from that one text, that gives some apostate fool the liberty to get rid of the right Greek text, Receptus, and then get rid of the right English text, the AV of 1611. Typographical errors of the 1611 edition were brought right back into line with the 1613. Thus, there was only no departure in writing from the text of 1611, but there was a return to it if any signs of departure show up in the printing press. Now, let me ask you a question. Were there clearly printer errors in the 1611? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were. Were there printer errors in the 1613? Yeah, there were. But what Ruckman is saying and what others are saying is that all and the only differences that exist are clear what? clear printer errors. Now understand, they never looked at manuscript 98. Let's look at the second quote here from page 14. The results of God-honored, God-blessed revision of the original 1611 text are as follows. That the edition of 1611, although prepared with great care, was not free from typographical errors, and that while most of these were corrected in the edition of 1613, others, in much greater number, were nevertheless then introduced, which have since been removed. That the revision of Dr. Blaney, so that would be 1769, made by collating the then current editions of Oxford and Cambridge with those of 1611 and 1701, had for its main object to restore the text of the English Bible to its purity, and that this was successfully accomplished. Now, if you are going to take Ruckman's statement on face value, then Ruckman has to be, in order to be consistent, does he have to view the switches, the 42 switches from you to ye, as improvements over what the original translator said?
Yes.
Yes. Okay? Next quote from page 16. As we have seen, any and all revisions were corrections of press errors where the typesetter had not followed the text of 1611. Let me ask you a question. If I could show you in a primary work in progress document that they are intentionally switched ye to you in manuscript 98 and then carried that into the 1611, was it clearly their choice that it say you and not ye?
Yes.
So this statement by Ruckman is not factually what?
Correct.
As we have seen, any and all revisions were corrections of press errors where the typesetter had not followed the text of 1611. These were revised back into subsequent editions, and then printer errors were corrected until a pure text was arrived at in 1813. Sylvia, circle that. I think that should say 1613. I think that's my typo. Which conformed to the original intent of the AV translators. And then finally on page 21 he says, we have learned that of the sum 20,000 supposed changes in the AV text between 1611 and now, at least 19,000 of them had to do with the spelling of English words that were already in the text and correcting the mistakes of the lithographers and the linotype operators, not the translators of 1611. Now, so what is Ruckman saying? He's saying that all changes are essentially either spelling, punctuation, or what? Print errors. Okay? Look at the next point. Page are we on?
Four.
Well, all right. So, Ruckman's thinking is correct in the following manner. The revision work that occurred on the AV text between 1611 and 1769 is not even remotely the same thing that occurred between 1870 and 1881 with the revision committee and the release of the revised version and the publication of the Westcott and Hort Greek text. Ruckman is right about that, okay? Just because they're changing a U to E, does that mean we have to get a whole new text?
No.
Okay? The modern critical text and its resultant modern versions differ substantively in their doctrinal content from the received text and its principal English translation, the AV. That said, it is certainly not true that the only differences between a 1611 AV and the now standard 1769 text are 1, spelling, 2, punctuation, and 3, the correction of printer errors. Manuscript 98 and other work-in-progress documents, such as Bod 1602, illuminate this reality in ways that Ruckman was unaware of in the early 1980s. Now, I'm being charitable there in my interpretation to Ruckman, okay? I'm saying I don't think Ruckman ever looked at Manuscript 98, and I don't think he knew. Now, maybe he did, and I'm giving him too much credit, but I'm choosing to exercise the principle of charity there, okay? Once again, Ruckman and other leading lights in the King James Only movement were largely unaware of these primary source documents when they enunciated their position. Now, folks, is that not a point I have been making the whole time? I've talked a lot about scholarly awareness and published access for all of these books, right? And it was not until the late 60s in the case of John Boyce. It's not until 1977 in the case of Manuscript 98. And after that, for the case of Bot 1602, that published access and information was available to the public on these things, unless you went to Britain yourself and parked your hiney in a library for 4 years to go through all this stuff on your own. All right? Is everybody with me? Mm-hmm. Now, in light of further evidence furnished by the work-in-progress primary source documents, this topic needs to be revisited. Over the next couple lessons, we want to use Manuscript 98 to look at the question of printer errors and intentional choices in an objective and evidentiary manner. I'm done with just accepting things people have said. I've said this before and I'll say it again. Reagan said, trust, then verify. Okay? Ross says, verify, then trust. If I can verify what somebody's saying, I'll trust what they're saying. If I can't verify it anymore, I'm not. I'm done just blindly trusting things that are said in King James, pro-King James literature and argumentation, because time after time after time, the facts have demonstrated to me that people didn't know what they were talking about. Okay? Now, if that statement sounds harsh, I guess it is a little bit. But I'm telling you, I trusted a lot of things people were saying. I just took their word for it that they had looked at things. It's not the case. Okay? So what I've done, guys, is I've identified two different categories that are identifiable in Manuscript 98 that we need to talk about when it comes to the question or issue of printer errors. Okay? So category one is when readings found in Manuscript 98 and the 1611 agree against later editions, okay? So if I go back up here to the second example, this is what I'm... So category one is instances like this, okay? Let me show you what I'm talking about. So here's Romans 1:11. The bishops had what? Ye. Manuscript 98 indicates an intentional change to what? You. Does the AB agree with the change noted in Manuscript 98? So, Manuscript 98 and the AB agree together against the later what? Edition. So that's the first category, alright? The second category, which we'll get to next time, assuming we have... I've given up trying to figure out how long things are going to take, but the second category is when readings found in Manuscript 98 and later editions of the AV agree against the 1611. So let me show you what I'm talking about. I don't have an example of it, but I can explain to you what I mean. Okay? So in this one here on Romans 1, do Manuscript 98 and the AV agree that it should be you?
Yes.
Yes, so that's category one we're going to talk about. Category two would be where Manuscript 98 agrees with a later printing against the 1611. So there are both phenomenon occur, where Manuscript 98 and the 1611 agree together against a later reading, and then there's a second category where Manuscript 98 and a later edition agree against what? The 1611. So there are two categories that we need to consider here as we look at this question of printer errors and how Manuscript 98 can help us think through this issue. Okay? So, it's already been a lot of material there. Anybody got any questions or comments? Okay, if not, then we'll continue the next point. Types of evidence. According to Professor David Norton, there are two kinds of pre-1611 evidence for the text of the King James Bible. He says, quote, there are two kinds of pre-1611 evidence for the text of the King James Bible, the sources and the written or printed versions directly, physically involved in the making of the translation. The sources, of course, the original language text, Hebrew and Greek, the ancient translations, particularly the Vulgate and the Septuagint, modern translations, including Luther's German and the Latin of Tremulus and Junius, and the earlier English translations. These contribute intellectually and, of course, crucially, without them there would be no King James Bible, but not physically to the King James Bible. Crossing the line between an intellectual and a physical source is the Bishop's Bible of 1602. In a sense, Boyce's notes also cross the line, for they are evidence of the intentional process that led to the text. Manuscript 98 and the annotations in Bob 1602 are physical sources. Though they contain no direct evidence of the thinking that led to particular readings, they show the peculiarities of the text being established. So, in other words, is Manuscript 98 a physical source that we can get our hands on that shows us what they thought the reading should be at a certain point in their process?
Yes.
The answer is yes. Okay? So this is not just an intellectual thing. We can actually get our hands on and look and see what they thought a reading should be at a given stage or a given point in time in the process. Does that make sense? Okay. Next point. Since Manuscript 98 and Bod 1602 were either wholly unknown, inaccessible, and or unstudied until the middle of the 20th century, they have only recently been utilized to evaluate how they might inform our understanding of the printed history of the King James text when it comes to the question of printer errors versus the intentional choices of the translators. Top of page 5. Norton says, until now, these physical sources have not been used for editorial work on the text. Whatever they might tell us about why the 1611 text reads as it does has been ignored. Okay? Now, he wrote this book in 2005. So when Ruckman said all that stuff in 1983, had Ruckman looked at this document when he said that stuff? I'm giving you the charitable interpretation and I'm saying no. If he did and he said it anyway, that's a whole other problem. Okay? On the other hand, the chief intellectual sources, the original language text, have been treated as direct evidence for how the text of the King James Bible should read. This is a natural way of working. Errors in the printed text of 1611 may be discovered by reference to the original. So let's stop there. Okay. So before Manuscript 98 was known, people are reading through the King James Bible, and do they see something that looks like a printer error? So before they can check Manuscript 98, because they don't even know it exists, the only thing they could really do is check the Greek. And what did the Greek say? And then use that to be a determination of whether or not they thought something was what? A printer error. What Norton is saying is now, because of the physical source, Manuscript 98, now can we actually go and look at, in a tangible way, what the choice of the translators actually was? Does everybody see how this is totally blowing the lid off of what we're able to do now in the process of evaluating these things? Okay? But it is also a dangerous way of working. Now here's this point, okay? But it is also a dangerous way of working because there are two kinds of error to be found in a translation: mechanical and intellectual. The former are usually errors of transcription and printing. The latter are errors of translation. If we accept that the text of the King James Bible should present the translator's understanding of the originals as they meant to express it, that only mechanical errors can be corrected. Does everybody understand what he's saying? Okay? Errors where an accident of some sort had led to a misrepresentation of the translator's understanding or expression. Intellectual errors must stand unless one is making a new version. Okay? Now, before everybody wets the pants and has a coronary, look at the next point. Unlike Dr. Norton, I do not believe the King James translators made any intellectual or translational errors. Let me explain. I believe the King James Bible contains all the correct readings. In other words, should Mark 16 be in the Bible? Yeah. Should the woman taken in adultery be in the Bible? Okay? I believe the King James contains all the correct readings and that the translators accurately expressed in English the substantive doctrinal content of the preserved originals. Okay? So I don't think they're saying that, for example, if Jesus died on a cross, they're not saying, you know, he was hung, or he was drowned, or he was drawn and quartered, or, you know, they're not making massive unfactual or wrong representations of what the preserved Greek says. Okay? Now you could say ye and you. You could say, you know, you could say church, congregation. You could play this dance, and people will say, well, that was a mistake. And what I'm saying is, I don't, that doesn't bother me. I believe there's a different way of saying the same thing. Okay? So, let me read that again. Unlike Dr. Norton, I do not believe the King James translators made any intellectual/translational errors. I believe the King James Bible contains all the correct readings and the translators accurately expressed in English the substantive doctrinal content of the preserved originals. That said, I cannot continue to repeat wrong information about the printed history of the text in the face of factual evidence. Okay? Attention to the physical sources shows that editorial development of the text has not distinguished between accidental errors and errors of translation. That is, readings that have been judged to be errors, but were the deliberate creations of the translators. So whoever went through and switched 42 times you to ye, did they think it was a mistake? The editor that did it, did he think he was improving the text by changing the you to a ye?
Yes,
but that's not what the translators chose. The translators chose for it to say what? You. Okay? Working from the intellectual sources, the original language text editors have corrected both kinds of error. Nor have they always kept themselves to matters that are clearly errors. Sometimes they have, by their lights, quote unquote, what? Improved the text. Okay? In 2005, for the first time, Dr. Norton compared the 1611 printing of the AB against later changes to the King James text with manuscript 98 to ascertain the original intentions of the translators in a handful of readings. Quote, I want to explore within specific limits the kind of information the physical sources give for the text. The principal limit is this. I have confined myself to places where there is some variation between the first printing and the text as we now have it, with attention to some of the variations that have come in but have been discarded from modern editions. The question of whether these manuscript materials might give evidence for the changes to the 1611 text that have never been yet made has not been broached. In other words, had anybody before he did this done what he's about to do? At least nobody in writing or print, okay? This brings us then to our first category up for discussion, category one. When readings found in manuscript 98 and the 1611 agree against later editions. All right, before we look at a couple examples, anybody got any questions? All right, no? Category one examples. Dr. Norton believes that in the places where manuscript 98 and the 1611 agree together against the 1602 bishops and more recent editions of the AV, one must view these amended readings found in manuscript 98 as the intentional choices of the translators. Consider the following explanation from the pen of Professor Norton, quote, the readings that differ from the Bishop's Bible of 1602 and are identical with the 1611 are the most important. Unless the same mistake was made twice, that is, unless manuscript 98 accidentally changed either the 1602 text or the translator's annotation, and then the printer made the same accidental change, which is unlikely but not impossible, these readings confirm that what appears in the printed text was the creation of the translators. We might speculate that some of the readings were created accidentally, but this makes little difference in practice. They entered the text at an early stage of its composition and survived several reviews by the translators before being printed. So in other words, if the change is marked in manuscript 98, and we already know that manuscript 98 was revised and went through at least two or three times, and that same reading shows up in a 1611, then we have to assume that they intended for it to what? To have that reading. Okay? So, becoming in effect deliberate parts of the work. Now, if a later edition makes a change to these, either the change is itself an error, or it comes from the editor presuming to know better than the translators. Uh-oh. And again, this is all stuff that isn't supposed to be the case. Okay? And I'm telling you, there are going to be people that write me and are madder than a stool pigeon at me for talking about this, okay? But guys, I'm over it. I'm over it. The factual evidence is what matters, okay? And if what we believe about, if what we believe doctrinally cannot take into account the actual state of affairs that actually exists, then do we have some issues? Okay? Now, let's look at these. Now, in this first one, did I note all the changes? I don't think I did. We're only looking at the issue where there's a variant. Okay? So, 2 Corinthians chapter 8. All right? Now, let's look at it. So, first of all, start in the comments column. Manuscript 98 removes the word making. So, here we go. So, here's the bishops. I got the strike through making. It doesn't show up in Manuscript 98 because they omitted it in their first stage work. Okay? Manuscript 98 omits also from the bishop's text. So this also in the bishop's text is removed in Manuscript 98. The AV moves Manuscript 98, Manuscript 98, in omitting the words making and also, thereby indicating the intentional choice of the translators. Okay? The word also. So let me explain. So here's the bishops. Making and also, are they both removed from Manuscript 98? Okay? Now we come to the next column, the AV 1611. Are both of those words also not in the text?
Yes.
In the AV 1611, okay? The word also was added back in by a later editor. If you go right now to your Bible, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 21, will you see the word also in the text?
Yes.
Was the word also in the 1611?
No.
No. Was the word also in Manuscript 98?
No.
No. Was the word also in the bishops?
Yes.
Yes. So in first stage work, did they intentionally omit the word also?
Yes.
Did the omission of also show up in the 1611? The omission continues into the 1611, right? But then the word's inserted back in here in a later edition. Okay, so let's look at the statement there on page 7. Since making and also are omitted in both Manuscript 98 and the 1611 AV, Professor Norton believes these omissions to be the intentional choices of the translator. See, here's the thing. Whatever they did here, did they duplicate it here for both words? So now we come over here, and the word also is put in, but not the word what?
Making.
So this, what Norton is saying is, this twin evidence here indicates that that's the way they wanted it to what?
To read.
Because at two levels, imagine having two dipsticks here. You could dip it in here midway with Manuscript 98. Oh yeah, also shouldn't be there. You go to the final product of 1611. That also is not there. Then you come, and then boom, also is in there again. Well, who made that choice? It wasn't the translators, it was some later editor. Okay, now let me ask you a question. But also in the sight of men. See, the reality is different from what people want to admit. Okay? So without the evidence of Manuscript 98, several such readings might be taken as printer errors. Okay? So if we didn't have Manuscript 98, would it be easy to say, oh yeah, that was just a printer error. They accidentally forgot to put the also in. You could easily do that, but the problem is then, well, what about here? It's also missing here. Okay? Without the evidence of Manuscript 98, several such readings might be taken as printer errors. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, 21 is a case in point. 1611 gives, but in the sight, instead of its predecessors, but also in the sight. I need to fill that with the Greek words, okay? Sorry about that. Manuscript 98 has a 1611's reading, proving that the omission is the work of the translators, since also was in the 1602 text. They must have struck. They must have struck it through there. So here, let me just recap. Is it here in the base text? It's also in the base text. Yes. They go through the first stage. Do they remove also from their first draft work?
Yes.
Yes. We come to the final product of 1611 and is also still missing.
Yes.
That all speaks to an intentional choice by who?
The translators.
The translators. Not an error by who? The printer. Okay? Let's look at Ephesians 6, 24. Here's another one. So, the bishops has the amen at the end of the verse. Manuscript 98 does not. 1611 does not. 1769 does. Okay? So what? So go to the point there. Unless the same mistake was made twice in both Manuscript 98 and the 1611 AB, it seems that the intention of the translators was to omit the amen at the end. Because is it made here? Is the decision to omit it made in Manuscript 98? First draft work? And is it that way still in the final product? Now, you could say, well, that's still an error because the Greek word for amen is in the text. Somebody could say that, and I would have to admit that. But does Manuscript 98 seem to demonstrate that it was their intention to not put it there? It looks like it. Let's go to another example, 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. Unfortunately, this is going to be broke up here, but we should be able to make do. So Manuscript 98 omits himself from the first clause. I wanted to actually simplify this down. So let's just go straight to the point here, okay? Notice the bishops. We're only going to talk about the one that is really causing the question here. Where did it go? Okay, notice. The bishops had unto. See that? Unto his eternal glory? Manuscript 98 changed it to what? Into his eternal glory. The AB has called us what? Into his eternal glory. So does the AB match the Manuscript 98 revision of the bishops? The later edition has what?
Unto.
Unto. Okay? So again, the AB and Manuscript 98 are in agreement about the revision, which indicates that unless the same mistake was made twice, the choice was whose? The translators. Go to the bottom of page 8. Manuscript 98 shows that the translators deliberately change all of their predecessors unto to into in 1 Peter 5:10, giving who hath called us into his eternal glory. A comparison, between Manuscript 98 and the 1602 bishop's text and the 1611 reveals multiple stages of revision, yet the word into is retained in the AV, thereby indicating intentionality on the part of the translators. Now, let's look at this, okay? Now, look at all of the other changes that are made here in this verse between the bishops and Manuscript 98. There's a bunch of changes that are noted there in the margin, okay? Including wording changes. Notice the end of the verse. Notice how the bishops had settled, strengthened, established. Manuscript 98, settled, strengthened, established. But look what happens in the 1611. Established, strengthened, settled. The order is what? Changed. So, is the AV making further revision of that verse beyond Manuscript 98, but yet are they keeping in Manuscript 98 the choice to say into and not unto? So that speaks to the fact that they wanted it to say what? Into. Okay? Go to page 9.
Should the reason that they work on that unto be that the intention of into is more like God controlled as opposed to unto giving the option for people to choose it?
So, maybe. I don't know. I don't have their notes that explain their thinking. But what we can say is this. We are on really, really shaky ground to say that into was a printer error. Because Manuscript 98 says the same thing, and there are other revisions after Manuscript 98 that are made, but that change stood. Okay? So let's go to page 9. Okay, Romans 12:2. Romans 12:2. Manuscript 98 contains three changes when compared to the bishops. So let's look at it. First, fashioned here is changed to transformed. Second, the good is changed to that good. So you see that right here? The good, that good. Third, and acceptable is changed to that acceptable. Right there. Okay? Then you go to the 1611 column. Are there further changes? The 1611 changed, transformed to conformed. In the first clause of the verse. Likewise, Manuscript 98's changed into your shape is changed to what? Transformed. So here's my point. Are they clearly going through this verse a second time and making further revisions beyond those seen in Manuscript 98? Yet, do they retain that good and that acceptable? Okay? So at bottom of the column, the rest of Manuscript 98's revisions are retained in the AV. The 1769 text changed that acceptable back to and acceptable. See that right here. So, does that imply intentionality? Look at page 10, notes on page 10. Once again, we see multiple stages of revision when comparing Manuscript 98 with the AV text of 1611. Yet, the reading that acceptable introduced in Manuscript 98 is retained in the AV. This does not seem like a printer error, but the intentional choice of the translators. Regarding this verse, Professor Norton states the following quote, the 1611 reverts to a reading from one of its predecessors, and the possibility of inferring a printer error is slighter, Manuscript 98's evidence is less important. Does no more than fill out the picture of what happened. At Romans 12:2, the 1602 bishops reads, that ye may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The 1611 has two changes. That ye may prove what is that good, that acceptable, and perfect will of God changes italicized. In 1629, the second that was changed back to and, giving the reading that remains in the text, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Here, the 1629 editors have observed that the Greek reads literally and acceptable. They have therefore corrected the English by the Greek. That's their reasoning. Without Manuscript 98, we might have guessed that the 1611's reading was deliberate. Manuscript 98, we might have guessed that the 1611's reading was deliberate. It restores an older reading. Tyndale's is, this looks like choice, not accident. So in other words, does Tyndale read that way? Was Tyndale one of the ones they're supposed to look at as they do the revision? And did Tyndale say that good and that acceptable? Okay. The result is that acceptable and perfect appears to be an elaboration of what is meant by good. Manuscript 98 confirms that the rejection of the literal reading is deliberate and locates the change in the first period of revision. Here the translators place other considerations ahead of word-for-word fidelity. So did they make the change themselves? Well, it's the same change in Manuscript 98 in a verse that have multiple stages of revisions demonstrable, okay? So, Dr. Norton concludes his comments on this category of examples with the following summative statements. Quote, in each of these cases, later editions have decided the 1611 was wrong and have restored the old readings. Perhaps the old readings were better, perhaps not. Manuscript 98 proves or confirms, as in the last example, that the King James Bible translators judged that they were not. The later editors, perhaps knowingly, have undone the translator's work.
Unknowingly,
have undone the translator's work. So folks, here's the irksome subject. When you are reading a 1769 standard text, are you reading things that were not necessarily the choice of the translators?
Yes.
Yep. And are they all printer errors? Are they all punctuation? Are they all spelling?
No.
Was the 1769 supposed to be a revision, or was it just the printer printing it?
It is an editor, Blaney, trying to... Look, when books are printed, there's always some, especially when they're typeset the way they were back then, where you had to set up the whole page and then clear it and set up the next page, there's always the propensity that there's going to be some kind of a mistake by the printer and the compositor who's laying out the text, right? That's a given. I mean, there's mistakes in every stupid piece of notes I write with a word processor in the 21st century, okay? So what the goal was to try to produce a streamlined text that would be standard, okay? Now, in readings where Manuscript 98 and the 1611 agree against later wording changes, it is best to view these readings as the original intent of the translators rather than printer errors. In these cases, Manuscript 98 serves to confirm the choices of the translators as exhibited in the 1611. Put another way, unless the translators made the same mistake twice, once in Manuscript 98 and again in the 1611, while accepting the other revisions of Manuscript 98 into the AV in the same verses, the most charitable interpretation of the evidence is to view readings in this category as the intentional choices of the translators, not printer errors. Does everybody understand why I'm saying that? Okay? So, I don't know how we got through 11 pages, but we did. This, of course, means that modern readers of the standard 1769 text are reading an edited text, and not solely the original wording choices of the translators. While this might be an inconvenient truth for the historic, I want that to say historic, King James only position, it is a textual and historical reality nonetheless. In the next lesson, we will consider Category 2, i.e., when readings found in Manuscript 98 and later editions of the AV agree against the 1611. Okay? Now, guys, I don't know what you were bargaining for here and stuff like that, but I told you that if I'm going to do this, we're going to go deep, okay? And we are these lessons are explaining this situation, in my opinion, at a level of depth that has really never been covered except by anybody who's read Norton's book, okay? So, I think that when we look at Manuscript 98, the primary source documents, they are extremely illuminating in what occurred and how it was done and why it was done the way that it was done. So, let me just say, this does not mean I'm not a King James advocate. What it means is, in my defense of the King James, I need to be as accurate and precise as I can be with the facts. Because it doesn't do my position any good to say things that could easily be proven wrong by somebody who has a better mastery of the factual information. All right, so we are right at 10. Anybody got any last minute questions or comments or observations?
You know how it was so important to have the names of the translators and the editors and all that back in 1611 and 1769, we have no names.
What do you mean?
Well, we have no names of who did the translating, who did all that change.
Well, we know the name of the editor.
Oh, we do.
We know the name of the editor of the 1762. It was a guy named Paris at Cambridge.
Okay.
And then the guy who edited the 1769 was Benjamin Blaney at Oxford.
Okay.
We know Blaney even wrote up an article for a magazine at the time. Was called like the Gentleman's Quarterly. That wasn't a dirty magazine, by the way. That explained what he did. We'll get to all that in due time. Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments, Bart?
Are there many examples of the 1769 that didn't choose one of the previous translations as opposed to totally new interpretation?
No. So in other words, if I'm understanding you right, in some of the cases where the 1769 makes a change,
it was just back.
It would have been a change back to something else. It would not have been a wholly unheard of reading that never existed.
Correct.
As far as I can tell. So we do need to qualify that just a little bit. Okay. So
maybe he felt that that was a choice that wasn't.
Mike?
So the main purpose of the 1769 was to correct the typos that were in the previous edition, is that right?
That would be sort of the stated purpose. However, more happened than that.
Yeah, it went a little beyond that.
They went beyond that and made editorial changes, like changing you to ye. Look, folks, that's a word change. That's not a spelling change. It's not a punctuation. Guys will argue with me that if you put an E in front of stablish and say establish instead of stablish, that that's a word change to a wholly different word of a discriminated meaning. Okay? When every dictionary that I can furnish, going all the way back as far as I can furnish an English dictionary, says the words mean the same thing. But now I'm showing where yous were changed to yees 42 times in Paul's epistles and the same guys that want to argue about establish, establish will argue to the death about ye versus you in other instances. Okay? So there's a lot of rethinking that needs to be done on this topic. So we got to quit, though, and I got to pack up. Look, folks, I'm not mad at